Hello and welcome to the Rangers Rundown, the internet's saddest podcast. Tonight I am Max. That's the last laugh you'll hear all night, everybody. It's just going to be tears and benedictions. I'm Max, and I'm joined tonight by Mike.
Good evening.
And the Giggler.
Hello, everyone.
How sad are you guys tonight?
I'm not sad.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty, holiday weekend was pretty good.
Yeah.
So, two people who don't care about Adrian Beltre.
Okay.
Right. Lack of empathy. That's fine.
If you want to bring up Beltre, yes. Incredibly depressed. I know it was the right move for the team going forward to see if Profar can make it at third base, but selfishly, I really wanted him to come back for one more year.
I mean, according to that one Cowboys writer I saw on the internet, he's not even a top 10 Ranger, so I don't know why anybody would be sad.
Ah, yes.
Did y'all see that?
Oh, you bet I did. Yeah.
I did not see that.
He signal boosted that.
It's so bad.
So there's, I guess we're not like journalists or media or anything like that. We're amateurs, so.
Very much not.
So I guess we should maybe, I should not be, a hypocrite or something like that. But basically, this is like this independent, like free-form blog news site that's kind of like The Athletic that I can gather because you have to pay to read their articles. And anyways,
but with hot takes,
right? The Athletic with Skip Bayless, and there was an article with a headline and like little description, like in the tweet, talking about how Adrian Beltre, yeah, he was nice and stuff, but he's not even a top 10 Ranger of all time. So what's all this hubbub about? And
insanely bad.
That's insane. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, this guy's list. He was like, I mean, look, I'm not even sure. I guess you could make an argument that he surpassed, you know, Ruben Sierra. And I was like, what?
You mean what? The guy that what was it? Who was the manager of the Yankees when Ruben was there? He called him the village idiot. Do you remember that?
Was it Joe Torre?
It might have been.
Yeah, this guy was like, I mean, I guess you could make room in my top 10 by dumping Toby Hera for Adrian Beltre. But then it was like, he just didn't play here long enough, unlike that classic longtime Ranger, Josh Hamilton, or Nolan Ryan, and then put him ahead of, like, Charlie Huff, and or behind Charlie Huff and Juan Gonzalez. I was like, it's Pudge. And Beltre, and Michael Young, probably, for that combination of just incredible, like, statistical performance, and he was a Ranger for a billion years. Was he the best Ranger? No, but, like, your sort of Ranger greats are probably, it gets real sad real fast, is what I'm saying. The Rangers, historically not a great franchise.
We don't have a Monument Park.
Yeah, you can have a Palmeiro, I could see that in there. I mean, if you really want to push, like, Kenny Rogers.
No.
Like, it gets real grim after Pudge and Beltre, and then depending on, you know, what your sort of very good definition is, or like what you're looking for in an all-time player, Hamilton for his incredible rise, and then Young for his longevity and being a part of most of those really good teams. I mean, he does lead like a lot of the Rangers leaderboards.
Yeah.
And he's good on Twitter. Woke Michael Young is very good. So.
Yeah.
Shout out. Anyway, yeah. So football writers probably should stop writing about baseball, a thing that Rangers fans are intensely familiar with at this point.
And basketball writers and announcers. Shots fired.
I will allow the hockey writers to do it. They all seem pretty cool.
And the morning guys on the ticket. They don't know a thing about baseball. When they get on there and start talking about the Rangers, it's just embarrassing how little baseball. They know.
That's the one with the dirt, right? There's dirt involved, I think. Yeah, no, good stuff. Always love to see my sport covered by folks who definitely know what the sport is and can name more than three players at a time. Love that stuff.
Well, speaking of Beltre, and you mentioned Nolan Ryan on that list of all-time Rangers.
I did.
I saw something. Was it either on Twitter or on Lone Star Ball? But it was a conversation. I think it was on Lone Star Ball about just leaving the Nolan statue at the ballpark and don't bring it over to the new place, and just
like out
replace
the parking lot somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, and just replace it with the Beltre statue that is inevitably going to be built.
Just the guy that was saying that Nolan wasn't that great because of the war he had while he was here.
I don't know, but
it was, that was really funny. Someone who'd never seen a single Nolan Ryan game, obviously. So
yeah, no, he's great. He's absolutely a great, and you know, he does have that real grit, you know, go get him Texan, good old boy kind of stuff too. So he's awesome, and he had some accolades here: 2 no hitters and the 5,000 strikeouts, and all that kind of stuff. And then it's just that the whole getting into a fight with JD and then leaving to go to the Astros and all that kind of stuff really put a sour taste in my mouth. And I'm like, you know, you actually were only here for 5 years, right? Or maybe it was 4. So, you know, maybe we just don't need your statue anymore. That's my personal, emotional, Beltre-loving opinion.
We got to get Beltre on one knee hitting a dinger.
Of course.
If that doesn't happen, I am intensely mad at everyone.
Yes.
Ooh, and Chuck Morgan, while you're listening to this, please jot this down. Give away a replica of that statue. Oh my gosh, I'd pay so much money for that.
Yeah, I would come back. That would be good.
That would be awesome. Anyways.
The Adrian Beltre Appreciation Podcast is in full swing.
Yeah, but you know, one thing that I'm really happy about with him retiring, I mean, is that he's getting to do it on his own terms. It's something that I talked about a lot throughout the season, and as we were speculating if this was going to be his final year, is that so many players that were great, you know, Ichiro, Ken Griffey Jr., just in recent example, the game had to tell him when to quit. They both retired mid-season because they literally just couldn't hit anymore, and they couldn't even ride it out for a couple more months and retire into the off-season. They had to just quit because they were failing at an embarrassing level, and Beltre didn't have to go through that. It would happen eventually. Who knows if it would have happened in 2019, but he firmly gets to go out on top, and he tells the game when he's done. And rather than it being the other way around, because that would have just been the actual worst thing. If he just couldn't get his bat around on a fastball or something.
I mean, it was his worst season since 2009, but it was still fine. I mean, it was not, like you're saying, one of those, oh dear, this shouldn't be happening anymore.
Oh no, he was one of the top hitters on the team.
Yeah, I think you could still squint, and you know, you don't even have to squint to see Adrian Beltre as a replacement level, if not average, somewhere in that range player in 2019. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. So his OPS was, his OPS was 98, and that was mostly because his power. Or sorry, OPS plus 98, mostly because his power was down throughout the most of the season. But he actually kind of regained it in August and September. And he finished really strong, and I think that if he wanted to come back, then he probably would have a good season at age 40, but he chose not to, and he's earned everything that's come his way, and thanks for everything, man.
I don't know about you guys, but when that announcement came down, I spent the better part of that morning just kind of poring over articles about Beltre and watching all the GIFs. Seeing some that I'd completely forgotten about, like when the cameraman was following him on his home run trot in Tampa, and the cameraman falls and Beltre just laughs and points at him. That was pretty funny. That's when I'd forgotten, because I hadn't seen that one in years.
Yeah, there's a lot of insanely good Adrian Beltre content on the internet.
Yes.
So much good stuff out there. It was fun. It was kind of fun seeing the rest of the internet getting to celebrate him as well, too. I mean, because I think Rangers fans have been super familiar with all of his antics for the last few years, but baseball is such a regional sport that even pretty dedicated followers may not be kind of tuning in and seeing his day-in, day-out interactions with Elvis or all the nonsense he does in the dugout. They might not know about his thing with Felix. So it was pretty fun seeing the rest of the internet go, oh, yeah, this guy is pretty cool. That's right.
I really liked Emily Jones' article in the Dallas Morning News. Did you get a chance to read that?
I did, yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah, and predictably, shockingly, Levi had an excellent take on the situation. I think my wife cried reading his article. Oh, man. Yeah. He does that. Thanks,
yeah, he
Levi.
Does.
appreciate it.
What I love most about reading those articles and stuff is that we have in our mind, I think, as a fan base, is you know, Beltre is, he's an awesome player and he's a leader, and you can just kind of put a blanket clubhouse leader, good guy, you know, super nice blanket on him and not really go into the finer details as to what that means and what he actually does. And so it's been really cool to read like the actual specific examples of that, because it's just kind of a rumor that we accept and are proud of, and you know, we love him for that, but we don't actually know those stories. We can't point to them and say this is why Beltre is so great off the field. And so those stories coming to light has been really, really heartwarming, and just shows a side of him that is, you know, just part of what makes every player and every reporter and every member of the media that's worked with him love him. We are getting to kind of see a little bit more of that side as well, which is, of course, wonderful.
I particularly enjoyed Emily Jones' stories about the two stories of him trying to get out of playing in a whole game in spring training. You all remember that? Fantastic. So the first one, I didn't pick up, the umpire had someone, maybe they were doing the box score and it was new for them, and the umpire told Adrian, hey, I know you always yell outside no matter where the pitch is, but don't do that today.
Yeah, and Beltre, the new guy.
Beltre took that opportunity to do it from the very first pitch until he got thrown out of the game, which was really, really funny. And then the second time, he tried to get out of the game, and the umpire said, if I have to work all nine innings, so do you. And so apparently it was just a profanity-laced tirade that he would go on after every pitch, and had the catcher just cracking up, and umpire wouldn't go for it. It was funny.
I really dug it. It was really good stuff. I'm definitely going to miss that whole aspect to Beltre's game, where you kind of never knew what you were going to get. You could get all kinds of crazy stuff just by tuning in when he picked up the on-deck circle. Who would have ever predicted that that would happen in a Major League Baseball game? So
I'm just going to miss the barehanded catch on the grounder and throwing as he's falling to the ground just seamlessly and throwing a strike to first base. You know, we got really used to that over the last 8 years, and we're not going to see that for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
No, that play is automatic for him.
Brace yourselves for what real third base defense looks like. Ooh, buddy.
you try and make that throw, and it ends up sailing into the stands. Yeah, that's what you get.
In a dugout.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Ooh, speaking of Beltre and a bare hand, I think I shared this in our group chat. But one thing that I thought was cool too, and I was reminded of it because of in Levi's article, John Daniels talks about how he had a torn ligament in 2015 in his thumb on his glove hand, I think. Yeah. So on his glove hand, so his left hand. And he missed about 2 weeks. He asked the doctor, will it get any worse if I play on it? No, but it will absolutely not get better, and you must have surgery, but it won't get any worse. Well, no. So he played through it, obviously. The Rangers make a great comeback to win the West and go to the playoffs, and that was also the year, you know, where he had to be helped off the field, and he was crying in Toronto, which was just, you know, that's a real easy image to digest. But one thing that was so important about that season, not only did he play well with this torn ligament, but I remember watching him warm up on the baseline or in front of the dugout before a game. And what he was doing was he was catching the balls like by trapping the ball with his bare hand and the backside of his glove. So he was, his thumb hurt so bad he couldn't close his glove. He wasn't going to do that unless he had to, because he was playing a game that counted. So that's the kind of pain that he was in. He didn't even want to, you know, catch a baseball with it. And yet he, you know, finished the season. I think he tore that ligament in like May or June and, you know, made the playoffs in 2015. That was a really special season.
Yeah. It just shows his character. I mean, that's it in a nutshell right there. He played through so much pain. I mean, he would have a grade 2 strain on his hamstring, which would put most people out for 6 weeks, and he would be out for about a week, week and a half, maybe, before he was already back, talking his way back on onto the field.
Yeah, he would take that minimum DL stint, ignore a rehab assignment, and then just play. Just be back in the lineup. It's like, well, all right.
Well, and okay. Wasn't it last year, I think, in 2017, when he did have a hamstring or a calf issue or something in late in the season when the Rangers were, by virtue of the American League being mediocre, it was still like 2 weeks into September and we were still technically alive in the playoff, in the wild card hunt. And he was playing every day and hitting. I think he was just playing DH, but he really should not have been out there. And it was only until we were mathematically eliminated that he stopped playing. Like, he accepted, okay, I don't need to, I'm risking further injury by being out here, and there's no point since we are mathematically eliminated. So, but man, love that guy so much. Just a true honor that he played for our little franchise in Texas, you know, or unhistoric and kind of, you know, run-of-the-mill mediocre franchise. We got to be, you know, blessed by one of the greats of all time.
Yeah, we got
hanging his hat here for 8 years. Like, that's just super cool.
And I hope he goes and has a lot of fun being very rich and not actually old.
Yeah.
So enjoy being, he's still 39 years old, which in the grand arc of the universe, pretty good to have made like $200 million over the last few decades. So have some fun, Adrian. There's a lot of stuff out there, especially when you are rich as hell. So go enjoy, go buy some of Elvis's silly shoes and rent an elephant. I don't know. Buy a plane.
Buy an island.
Yeah, buy an island.
That's what I would do.
I would definitely. Just Dominican Republic 2. He's going to buy another island, like a Greek island. I'm super down with that.
So what do you guys think of Elvis taking over as El Capitan?
Man.
Well, he has
to. Elvis Andrews turning into an old man before our eyes is very weird.
Super weird.
It's so odd.
He's one of the first players that I remember watching him. Like, I remember his debut.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, I'm 25, so you know, that list is going to be kind of small. But, like, I remember reading about him as a prospect. You know, he came over with the Mark Teixeira trade, and I remember him bumping Michael Young off a shortstop and then going to the World Series, and he has those, all the pictures of 2010 World Series. He has that afro and stuff. And it's just, man, like, he's 30. Jeez.
Yeah, and I like the guy, but I just don't see him having the same kind of presence as Beltre. Of course, I mean, those are big shoes to fill, but I don't know. He seems more happy-go-lucky. He's not a guy that's going to be staring someone down for doing something stupid in the field. I don't know. I just don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I mean, there's different leadership types, and
of course,
surely he's he's picked up how to be effective with Beltre. He's had 8 seasons with him, so
yeah.
And it kind of has to be him. Because who would be his second in command? Who would be the vice president of the clubhouse?
Well, the oldest guy is Chu. I mean, that's
I guess Chu.
One older position player. Got Mathis. Jeff Mathis is older as well.
We'll get to him.
Spoilers. In a second. Oh no, I've gotten ahead of myself.
But I think you have to be able to bat your weight to be the captain of the team. that should be the requirement.
I think it's a fair question, though, about where Texas is going to get that from position players. I mean, obviously there are pitchers, but there seems to be a sort of a gap between pitchers and position players when it comes to being clubhouse leaders, and you have kind of different camps. Pitchers follow the pitchers, and position guys follow the position guys. So your other two old men, there's only two other guys born before 1992, I think, who are on this roster now, and that's going to be the aforementioned Mathis and Shinsu Chu. And you know, Mathis has a great clubhouse reputation that we'll get to later on, but is going to be brand new to this team. So your other kind of old men, your established guys, are like Rougned Odor.
Yeah.
And Joey Gallo. there are great character stuff said about Gallo, but you know, he's still a kid. He's 25 years old. So, he just turned 25, like last week. Happy birthday, Joey Gallo.
Happy birthday.
Blappy Herp Day. So, I mean, you're running out of... It's a very young team. I mean, everybody on here is born in the mid-late... You know, the early mid-90s, pretty much. And then you've got a couple of older pitchers, but, you know, Bush is an 80s baby, but he was out of the game for a really long time, and I don't think anyone's looking to him to be the... I hope no one's looking to him to
be the
like, psychological, philosophical leader of a pitching staff for many reasons.
Number one might be because... Right. He has to room with his dad on the road.
All of it. Just I would say the major reason is all of it, just top to bottom. but you know, Chris Martin was in Japan for a while, so he's an odd choice to be that guy. Minor is interesting, but he was also out of the game for 2 years. But he's another sort of older head, which is I think hard to remember. And then you have Edinson Volquez, who we'll talk about in a little while too. But
again, another newcomer to the team. He hasn't established himself yet.
I mean, it's just it's weird. It's a very young team, and it's hard to pick where you know that kind of was coming from. I think Elvis is interesting because when you have so many young players, you need some of them to step up and take on that mantle. And Elvis didn't have to do that when he was a younger player because he was surrounded by some of these guys like Mike Young and then Adrian Beltre and other dudes who had big influence in the clubhouse. So maybe he's in a good position to help kind of let some of these younger players take on that leadership role should they want it, because you know he himself isn't all that old. So if you start seeing him step up from a guy like Joey Gallo or Jurickson Profar, like I mean anybody, it's an open field, and you just kind of hope somebody takes those reins and gets in with a new young manager and takes over, start you know rebuilding that good clubhouse reputation that the Rangers have had for the last couple of years.
What'll be interesting is one thing that I firmly believe about 2015 and the reason why the Astros ended up losing their lead on the division is because they were talented, of course. They just I feel like they got in over their heads and didn't know how to win out and take it day by day. I think that they started seeing the you know the warning lights that were flashing and just crumbled underneath that pressure. And then that's evidenced by the fact how they went out and got like Carlos Beltran, Brian McCann, guys like that. So it will be interesting to see if that if to watch in the next year or two if there is any semblance of that here in Texas and all of our guys being 25 and younger, how do they, you know, navigate certain aspects of the marathon season, and is it does their youth and inexperience show up, or will it not be a hindrance? Will the fact that they've all played together and they seem to be really great friends if you follow them on Instagram and stuff, Mazzara and Delino and Joey Gallo and IKF, they're all like hanging out all the time, so that's cool. They should be able to have a good clubhouse vibe, I'm guessing, but it'll be interesting to see if that kind of operates here and what does it mean to be like a young core hopefully growing together and turning into a contender together.
Who do you see as the guy that would be the one taking upon himself to hold back Jose Bautista in that situation with Odor now that Beltre is gone? Seriously, it would seem weird anyone else doing it.
I mean, I would go with my large adult son Joey Gallo.
I would go with that
like
too.
A really neutral guy. Like he seems like a pretty get in the middle of stuff, but yeah.
But he did have that thing. Yeah, he did have that thing with in LA. Remember, he was about to kill Cody Bellinger or whoever it was. Like Gallo came in.
Oh yeah, no, he did.
All in a huff.
Moved. Yeah, that was good.
So there's that element too. I don't know.
Ronald Guzman? No. I mean, I don't think you have anybody who's going to do anything like what an Adrian Beltre, because you know Beltre could get away with doing that to anybody in baseball. Not a single person in baseball could get mad. I mean, I would be very happy if Adrian Beltre ever hugged me for any reason. But just throw that out there. It's Christmas time, Mr. Beltre, and if you want to do one iota of good for the world, I will take a hug. But you know, no player in baseball is going to get pissy at a guy like Adrian. Taking him away from a thing, you know, like, why don't you come on down, buddy? Like, I don't know that the Texas has a player like that. I don't know that we should be...
Well, I mean, Chu would think would be like that. I just don't see Chu being the kind of guy that would take it upon himself to do that.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I think he's a guy who internally is going to be a big clubhouse leader, but he's one of those ones that you're not going to hear a ton of stuff about.
Right.
Like, I think they've already said to some extent that Chu is, because it's veterans usually who sit on the kangaroo courts and stuff like that, that, well, Beltre kind of ran that show, that Chu was certainly a part of it because he has been around a long time and has sort of a coach's mentality. You see all the stories about him working with other hitters and just sharing the information that he has is pretty cool. But yeah, I don't think we have anybody like that on the team. You've got some really young players who seem like they might grow into that type. I think Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has a reputation for being in that category. You could see Jose Trevino doing that in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Profar has always been so chipper. He's an interesting pick for this. There are things to track next year of, what does this very young team do? Is this a team that can gel like the Atlanta Braves did, pick up a couple of older heads? Maybe Shin-Soo Choo fills that role that, say, a Nick Markakis did to some extent with Atlanta. You've got a couple other guys lying around, and the young kids all just gel together really fast. Obviously, you'd love to see the performance that the Braves put together, but they're also supposed to have a pretty tight clubhouse. So,
and that stuff's important.
It's driven very hard by guys like Ozzie Albies and even Ronald Acuna, who is an infant and has been in the bigs for, 4 months. So it can happen. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a good question to ask about, where is that leadership going to be coming from? Is this something Elvis is going to be able to do? He's always been kind of a right-hand man, or maybe more of a left-hand man. He's a little more on the sinister side. So it's going to be fun. I've always loved those articles that give you a little bit of insight into the clubhouse, and I know Levi is going to give those to us next year, and other folks will talk about it. Evan Grant always seems to put out a couple pieces talking about that kind of thing. And the first couple weeks of the season or the end of spring training. So, well, we'll see. Maybe that's why we signed Jeff Mathis. We need an old man.
Well, Elvis does bring one thing to the table. He has actually been to the World Series. I saw on Lone Star Ball.
He's the last one, right?
Yeah, he's the last man standing from the 2011 team. Very, very sad. But he's been there, and he can talk about that experience with those guys.
Wait, did y'all know that Elvis had a brother who played minor league ball?
Yeah.
Errol.
Yep.
No, I did not know that.
Never seen that before.
He was in the Rangers organization.
Really?
Yep.
I mean, I know Profar and
he was with the Yankees and then with...
And Rougned. They both have brothers. They're in the organization.
No, there was a point where he was part of the...
2011, the Rangers he was with the Frisco Rough Riders for
ding ding ding
a little while, looks like. I don't think he played, though. He has no stats from that season.
Ah, well,
but yeah,
I'm still right.
So would you be any more surprised to see Errol Andrus named the Texas Rangers hitting coach than checks notes here, Luis Ortiz, not Lulu Ortiz? Yeah, Texas has a hitting coach that isn't Anthony Iaposi. It's Luis Ortiz, the other Luis Ortiz. That's literally... I mean, he was from the Dodgers. That's the extent of things that I know about Luis Ortiz.
Yeah, honestly, I thought the Rangel... Was it Rangel? I don't know how you pronounce it.
I'm assuming it's Julio Rangel.
Rangel, okay. Yeah, I was more surprised by that because he doesn't have any big league experience, either as a player or as a coach. And I just thought, pitching coach is a pretty important position. That seems like a bit of a quantum leap, but JD knows more than we do.
Yeah. I'll say this about Ortiz, is that I see a guy coming from Los Angeles with the Dodgers, and I think about Cody Bellinger and guys that hit the crap out of the ball in the sky into the night and put it in the seats and change the scoreboard. So... just let him go on a retreat with Mazzara. Like, let them just really... please be good, Nomar. I'm running out of patience. Please. Just hit home runs. You're really good at hitting home runs. Do it. Just hit the ball in the air. Listen to this guy. He turned Max Muncy into, like, a 45 home run hitter.
The two of them should get matching shirts and go traveling around the Dominican following the Winter League. Just taking y'all in.
I'm excited. I think this speaks to what we were talking about last episode, and that the Rangers are clearly trying to just get brain power, get organizational talent out of orgs that have had these success stories. So Rangel, there's not a lot on him, but he was a pitching coach and coordinator in the Indian system for a long time. And I don't know if y'all know this, but the Indians have been really good at pitching for like 4 years now. And they've seen some of those guys come up through their system and play at the level of their hype, like Danny Salazar or Carlos Carrasco, who were, oh yeah, those guys could be ones. And then usually those dudes turn into relievers. And then Salazar and Carrasco, when they've been healthy, have been really good.
Mm-hmm.
Or Trevor Bauer, who's obviously well-documented with all the nonsense that he does. With he's so big in the drive line, and he's himself a very sort of cerebral player. But he is a success story of that organization as well. And Corey Kluber was a guy who was seen as potentially being a bust. He was a dude who folks thought was not going to, you know, make it work, and then has been a robot for like 6 years now. So trying to find anybody who's got some connection to that, that's pretty good. You know, like Hayden, you were just saying Ortiz coming out of the Dodgers organization. I guess they're hoping he's got something in there. And, you know, Woodward had that connection with him, so maybe he knows something about this guy's ability to work with young hitters. Get that ball in the air, Nomar.
Please. Yeah, if he could just change Nomar's launch angle, that's a success.
Yeah, literally just that thing would be
groundbreaking.
You don't need to do anything else. So I think it's interesting. I mean, there's not enough there to go on to really say, oh, great hire, or oh, this is a stupid hire. I think, though, that you look at the there's no results yet, and we'll probably never, just because it's, you know, so hard to evaluate if a pitching coach or a manager was ever actually good or bad. I don't know that we'll ever be able to definitively say if these were good hires, but by process, I like both of these. Go and get a guy who isn't just some hitting coach who's been lying around for years not working for a team. Like, if he was that good, why is he available to you? Find a guy who's on the way up, who maybe has some different ideas, some different training, different background. See what happens. If it doesn't work, it's probably about the same level of it didn't work as anybody else you could have hired. And if it does work, boom, big win. I like it. Y'all want to talk about Jeff Mathis?
Sure.
So the Rangers signed Jeff Mathis.
He's to a 2-year deal, no less.
For like $6.25 million. Okay, Jeff Mathis, he's 35 years old, I think. He'll be 36 next season. So old guy.
And he's got an ops plus to match his age.
Basically been
a backup catcher
for 20 years. One of the worst hitters in modern baseball history. What's his career OPS plus, Hayden?
52.
That's bad.
Half a player, as you said. Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty bad. Supposedly one of the best gloves in Major League Baseball. He's supposed to be a bit of a pitcher whisperer, a guy who can really guide a pitcher through a game. He's really, really good at calling pitches, at talking guys down when they need to be talked down, or talking them up when they need to be talked up. He's apparently great in the
clubhouse. He frames pitches well.
He is a good framer. You know, the metrics like him a ton, although the biggest thing about him defensively seems to be his pitch calling, which is pretty big, but his ability to block balls in the dirt, I think, mm-hmm. is his number one. I know a number of the articles I read with pitchers were talking about how that curve in the dirt, and that you knew he was going to block it for you, and that it opens up a lot of pitches for you in a strikeout situation where you can throw anything and know it's not going to the backstop.
The number that leapt off the page for me in the last four seasons, he's had, I think it was 14 pass balls. The Rangers had 13 pass balls just last year.
Yeah. So he stops baseballs. He does not let baseballs get past him. He's very good behind the plate. There's no way to not emphasize enough how bad a hitter Jeff Mathis is. He is essentially the polar opposite in some ways of Robinson Chirinos. He's maybe a better defender than Chirinos has ever been a hitter, although he's also only ever played like a third of a season at a time because he's injury prone and, again, insanely bad hitter. Carlos Tochi is a better baseball player at the plate than Jeff Mathis is.
Yes. Now, I was going to share here's your Funbers, the return of Funbers. So, 2018, all of us witnessed the Carlos Tochi experience. No offense to him, you know, whatever. It's not his fault that he was on the roster.
A little offense to him.
A little offense to him, but I mean, he's not a major league player right now. Like, he had to be on the roster, and, you know, he performed as well as kind of we expected. Unsustainable, zero chance that he starts out anywhere other than the minor leagues to start 2019, which is where he belongs. Sure. Best of luck to you. Hope to see you soon, because you're actually good now. So he was, but he was like, it was his performance at the
plate. Hold on. He never actually won actually good. Did he?
No. I'm just saying, like.
Well, you just said he was actually good. I'm like, no, he never won that.
No, I'm saying hopefully, yeah. Hopefully, eventually, he'll be actually good. And then, hey, guess what? You're a major league player. You're a contributor. Cool. Welcome in, Tochi. Now your time has come. Your time was not 2018. We forgive you. Like I said, not your fault. Anyways, untentable at the plate. Absolutely, you cannot carry that guy on your team. Apparently, we did. But you shouldn't do that. And Carlos Tochi, for as bad as his 2018 was, Jeff Mathis has compiled 7 major league seasons that were worse than Tochi's 2018.
That's hard to do.
Like
he has, I mean, sometimes the ball just finds your bat, you know?
Right. He has 5 seasons. Seven seasons where his OPS was lower than, I think the number was 555 or something for Tochi last year. I don't have it in front of me. Here's a particularly spicy number. In the prime, sorry, Jeff. In the prime of his career at age 28, he played 93 games, which is the second most, only by one in a season for the Angels. In those 93 games, he managed to have an OPS of 484. That would be a pretty solid slugging percentage. But no, that's the slugging plus on base. It's 484.
Yeah, that's
it's just...
That's cheese on base percentage.
Exactly.
Anyway, I'm really glad that we saved $4 million and didn't bring back Robinson Chirinos, clubhouse guy, you know, respected leader. And we're instead going to commit to 2 years and $6.25 million on this. So
the thing is too is that it's a multi-year deal. If you want to have Jeff Mathis around so that way he can rub his, you know, pitching whisperer magic off on Jose Trevino and on our young pitchers, great. That'll be worth the time, maybe, sure. But for 2 years, like, why does he need to be around in 2020? I mean, I guess we're hoping that he gets to then work with, you know, Palumbo for a whole year and Kyle Cody and Cole Reagans potentially and win. I don't know. Because just why isn't he a coach? Just let him be a coach or something. Give him $6 million to be a coach and keep Robinson Chirinos. I miss Robinson Chirinos.
Sadly, he's far from the worst catcher the Rangers have ever had. I would put that label on one Chad Kruder.
Okay.
Look up his stats. I think they hold up. I remember him having a season where he batted 143. He was awful. Right? He was awful at the plate.
I mean, I think to be as charitable as possible, what the Rangers are hoping is that they get a guy who's really going to elevate a few of these pitchers. A guy who can turn a Mike Minor and a Drew Smyly and an Edinson Volquez, who again we'll get to in just a minute, into above average major leaguers, maybe do something to help Yohander Mendez and Ariel Jurado or any of these other nameless minor league free agents that we'll inevitably pick up in a month or three. And you get that good development on some guys, and then maybe a couple things break right, and you're talking about trading guys at a deadline or winning more games than you expect. Maybe you can jumpstart things a little bit. And honestly, it's not bad. I mean, he is an excellent defensive catcher. In a vacuum, it's probably a pretty good move for a crappy team like Texas to say, look, it doesn't matter if our catcher can't hit. He can really catch, and that's good because this team really need something to increase the pitching staff, and it's a lot cheaper to buy a good catcher than it is to buy an ace. But it's combining picking up this pretty interesting profile with having dumped Chirinos over $4 million. There's room for both of those players on this roster. They would actually complement each other very well, in my opinion.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
So. Especially if you're trying to work with a third string, you have another catcher on the roster, so you can let Chirinos DH in games. You can let Chirinos be sort of your bulk. You know that he and Mathis are not going to be there available for 150 games. they're certainly not going to play that many, and you'd be lucky to get either of them to play 100 games. Yep. So you've already got that depth in IKF on the roster, most likely, and you've got Jose Trevino sitting at AAA, most likely, ready to be the other backup. It's super weird to me that Texas is going to, unless they sign another catcher, like Jet Bandy.
That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
What are they going to do?
How much input do you think Woodward had in this signing? Because this was after Woodward came on board. Do you think that maybe he's a defense-first kind of guy, and this is his first statement that they are going to improve their defense?
I imagine he's at least part of the conversation, but I'd imagine just given how long it takes to negotiate these things and when it happened, it was largely a JD in the front office call.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to see this be a reevaluation into catching fundamentals and the organization showing a real dedication to guys like Trevino, trying to mold them into being really useful players. But even if Trevino does turn into a Jeff Mathis type, you're hoping that he can hit better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would be disappointed if Trevino played great defense and OPS plus 50 next year. I would be incredibly disappointed if that happened. It's not unreasonable for it to happen, but I would still be sad.
Oh, I think he can do better than that.
Yeah,
he's got some pop in his bat. He would have an ops that would be much higher. I mean, it's not going to be 800, but
he's not going to be Robinson Centurinos.
No, and not next year.
A couple million dollars here or there, and maybe the team brings Torino's back on a reduced contract. They sign him for a cheap 3-year deal or a 2-year deal, like maybe that, and then we don't have anything to be mad about anymore. But
except now,
this is the catching that
Mathis is blocking Trevino.
Yeah.
That would be a problem. I would have a problem with that.
Well, you have two fragile guys between Mathis and Torino's, and one of them's going to be hurt pretty much all the time.
But you've got IKF on the team, too. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be expecting him to take some of those starts behind the plate.
A few.
So there wouldn't be room for Trevino if they had all three of those guys.
No. I think Trevino's a guy who's going to be up and down the season anyways, just based on injury. He's going to be presumably playing a lot more now unless Texas signs another catcher or does something like Nick Jet Bandy, a major leaguer next year for reasons unknown to man or God. So it's I think I would have liked the Jeff Mathis signing a lot if this team still had Robinson Chirinos. It makes sense. It's just weird to do it when you're completely punting offense now and you're locked yourself into a 35-year-old, 36-year-old catcher for 2 years at catcher money.
Who's never played money. More than 94 games in a season.
Yeah, yeah. You're reasonably hoping plays like 75 games next year. I mean, I guess you can hope that you can get 100 games out of him and just say, well, we'll just eat the enormous offensive loss that we're sustaining here. But even teams that have liked him, that have loved him in the past, have not re-signed him to long deals and have never let him catch 100 games. I think they did it one time. Because he's really bad as a hitter. He's insanely bad at it. And good teams can't afford to have a black hole like that in their roster, no matter how good his defense is as a catcher. Especially because he's injury prone, so even if you are willing to roll with it for a few weeks, he just gets hurt. Blech.
Yeah, it would be. I think that you're totally right that this signing would look a lot different with Torino still on the roster, because then you could say, okay, let's give Robinson 85, 90 starts behind the plate. Let's give Mathis 60 or so, and then 15 to 20 we're going to give to IKF, something like that. Instead, we now have to honestly can't rely on more than 75 or so, like you said, from Mathis. So who's going to catch the remainder of the games, those 90 games? Because mm-hmm.
Is not yet major league ready.
Right, and so you're
sacrificing some long term development on Trevino, working with those young guys that you really want him working with at AA and AAA. You want him getting experience with like Taylor Hearn, etc. And you wanted to just be focusing on putting those last bits of polish on his bat before he has to come up there and get clowned on by major league pitchers who all throw 98 with crazy 12-6 curves. That's a lot to be doing all at once, and that's what the Rangers are signing themselves up for right now.
Apparently. Opening day is 122 days away, so we'll see about So we'll see what they do to address the catching situation. It's just, it seems like this is probably what they're going to do. they're going to roll with this because the best catcher that's on the free agent market is Robinson Chirinos. So he would fit this team really well, actually, but apparently not. So I guess here we are. And I got the notification on my phone of Rangers signed Jeff Mathis to 2-year deal. I was like, wait, that Jeff Mathis that played for the Angels?
Yeah,
wait, like, wait, we signed guy? Him? Are you? Oh no, we didn't. Oh yes, we did. So,
man.
Gosh.
But well, he's gonna make Edinson Volquez into a star again. So
yeah,
quit your bitching.
World Series champion,
2019 Cy Young winner,
comeback player of the year, Cy Young MVP. But not an all-time Ranger great because he was only traded for Josh Hamilton. So yep, Edinson Volquez looks like he's gonna be one of many fifth starters the Texas Rangers employ next year behind Steph, ace, big finger quotes there, Mike Minor, joining the likes of Drew Smyly and Johanna Mendez and Ariel Jurado and Adrian Sampson, who a lot of national writers are very casually penciling in as Rangers' fifth starter. And I'm like, did y'all just look at the depth chart on MLB.com and assume Adrian Sampson was good? Because, oh, buddy, I would not be so blasé about assuming Adrian Sampson is going to be a guy who has more than five starts next year.
Don't forget about Chi-Chi.
Yeah, and I think he's still technically a minor league free agent. He conceivably could sign with another team, but I don't know who would want him. So he's probably in the mix for Texas to be looking at. Tim Lincecum, potentially.
Oh, boy, yeah. Yeah.
Don't forget about Big Sexy either.
Yeah, Bartlett Clark could come back. He apparently
bring him back. Last year,
and Texas will probably need more arms, although they've got enough arms in the system right now that I imagine they're only going to be adding minor league free agents, and Bartolo might want to get him a major league deal, so kind of up in the air there. Rangers added along with Volquez, Taylor Hearn, who we've talked about a lot, Scott Heineman, who we've talked about a decent amount, and Wei J. Wong, who we've talked about like three times. All of those dudes are out of the 40s. They're not eligible for the Rule 5 draft in a couple of weeks. I think four very unsurprising moves. Hearn is one of the Rangers' top prospects now. Heineman is a fourth outfielder as we speak, and he is beloved by certain members of the prospect scouting community. He's a guy who looks like a fourth outfielder and will probably play like one, which you can always dream. He's the Rangers' next Ryan Rilla, I suppose.
Don't say that.
Hey, I'm sorry to everyone involved.
You forgot we're going to sign Bryce Harper. This is a non-issue. Don't worry.
Yeah, that's why he's the fourth outfielder. Starting center fielder.
Okay.
Do you all know who the starting center fielder is on most like Rangers 2019 depth chart projections?
I hope it's Gallo.
It's Joey Gallo.
Yeah.
Most places are listing an outfield of Chu/Calhoun. Mazzara and Joey Gallo, and I think it's awesome, but it's kind of funny. So I figure that the Rangers, whose 40 man is, I believe, at 37 players now, will add one, maybe even two guys in the Rule 5 draft. You know, the Rangers are in a position to be able to afford carrying another guy like that. Hopefully they don't have a Carlos Tochi. There's a couple of interesting names out there, like there are every year in the Rule 5. You always got some hard-throwing relievers or some utility infielder types. Richie Martin with the Oakland A's is sort of interesting in that mold, and there's a few outfielders lying around. I imagine Texas will be picking up one and maybe even two of those guys that do pick eighth in the Rule 5 this year, so they'll probably pick somebody up. Might only keep one by the time the season has started, and goodness only knows if they'll actually sustain that through the season, but yep, there we are. No big surprises left off the roster, unless you really love Andy Ibañez, which you probably shouldn't.
The one player that some people, and I think MLB.com had an article because they had to choose one player from every team that might get picked up in the Rule 5 draft. Mm-hmm. So Mike Machuela is an interesting name. I don't think that there's any chance that a team could reasonably stash him on a major league roster for 162 next year.
Yeah,
but
I'm shocked.
He has the stuff. Like he has the MLB stuff. It's just that he's not ready to be a pitcher yet. So like that's just the kind of deal where I really hope somebody doesn't pick him up, but I don't think they will. And the fact that we still have three slots left on our roster suggests that we don't think that anybody will either.
And he was pretty brutal in 2018.
Yeah. So
to convert him from a starter to a reliever, he improved slightly, but yeah, he's still got a long ways.
Long ways to go. And that is on December 13th, I believe, the draft, so in the morning, which is actually a pretty quick turnaround. December's right around the corner, so that's a little bit of an early Christmas, maybe. We'll wake up, or we'll go to lunch on the 13th and check our phones and say, oh, cool, we have more Carlos Tochis to open.
Very
excited. I'm going to miss our punching bag.
Oh,
I really am.
We just signed a 2-year punching bag, my friend.
Yeah, this is true. This is true.
No, he'll probably be good at what he was signed to be good at, and we'll just overlook that because we're not in the clubhouse and because we can't understand what he's actually doing during a game. All we're going to see is all the strikeouts and ground balls. So,
or he could just pull a Luke Roy and just completely fall apart when he joins the Rangers.
Jeez, imagine! Oh my gosh!
Imagine what that would look like.
Man, in my mind's eye, I can still just visualize Luke Roy catching a pitch like at the knees and just swiping it down, just like his glove has a magnet in it, just straight to the plate.
Yeah,
it's so aggravating to watch him play.
Yeah.
Okay, that's enough Luke Roy talk.
Yeah, I think we're fully established there. But hey, it's gonna be fun.
The offseason rages on.
Pitchers and catchers. 92 days for that.
92 days for that. Cool. Well, until we'll record another podcast between now and 92 days, probably sooner than later.
Yes.
And thanks for listening. Right.
When news breaks, we break in.
Ooh, that's a good slogan. We should get that like on a billboard. House.